Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you for our Tuesday podcast. On my mind, an outbreak of measles and the growing power of the anti-vaccination movement. The U.S. declared measles eradicated in the year 2000, but refusal to vaccinate children among certain pockets of the population means the disease is resurging. Public health officials in this country say 10 states have reported cases in 2019 alone. And internationally, the World Health Organization recently named vaccine hesitancy as one of the top global threats of 2019. I invited Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, into the studio to learn more. Dr. Fauci, it's great to see you.
Good to be with you, Diane.
Now, in Washington State and in New York, we've had two recent outbreaks of measles. They brought attention to the fact that there is this large anti-vaccination movement. It's raised concerns about public health all over the country. Tell us how those outbreaks began and why.
Well, the outbreaks are absolutely directly related to the lack of vaccination among a certain percentage of the population. When you're dealing with measles, which is an extraordinarily contagious, maybe one of the most contagious viruses we know of, but we have a vaccine that's one of the most effective vaccines of all vaccines we know. But when you're in a community, the model is that if you get below a certain percentage of the population that is vaccinated, and for measles, the critical level is somewhere around 92 or 93%.
Wow.
So when you get into 90, 85, 80, then what happens is that there's a protective veil over the community called herd immunity, which means that such a high percentage of people are vaccinated that when the virus gets inserted into the community, usually from outside the country, a visitor would come in from a country where there are measles outbreaks, when that particular person starts spreading it, the veil of protection of herd immunity isn't there. So those in the community who are not vaccinated, namely the children of parents who are anti-vaxxers, those are the ones that are vulnerable. And those are the outbreaks that we're seeing in Washington State and the outbreak that recently occurred in New York City in the Hasidic Jewish section of Brooklyn and in Rockland County. It was that the vaccine rate went below a certain level. Someone came from Israel who was unvaccinated, who was infected, went into the Hasidic community, and you had a big outbreak. So that's the root cause of this, is the lack of vaccinating the children.
Now, I understand the latest report from the World Health Organization said there were 136,000 deaths around the world in 2018 from measles. What has happened?
Well, that is really unfortunate to the greatest degree, because measles is an entirely preventable disease. The vaccine is 97 to 98% effective. So when you look globally, it is generally because there are certain regions of the world where you don't have access to the health care that would give you a vaccine. The thing that is so disturbing is that in the developed world, including the United States, there are these pockets of anti-vaccine movement which deliberately don't take a vaccine, which when you look at the potential damaging effects of measles, it is really, in many respects, unconscionable.
Tell me what those damaging effects are and why are people dying?
Well, it is a potentially fatal disease, even though the overwhelming majority of people recover. But if you just take a look at our history, when you and I were children, before the vaccine became widely available in the early 1960s, in the United States, we had 2 to 3 million cases of measles a year, 500 deaths, 1,000 cases of encephalitis, and thousands of hospitalizations. So if you look at measles, first of all, at best, it's very uncomfortable for a child. You remember locked in your bedroom with the rash and the fever and feeling terrible. I remember that too. But if you look at the statistics, Diane, 1 in 10 people, children, who get measles will get a significant ear involvement that could lead to deafness. 1 in 20 get a pneumonia that could be life-threatening. 1 in 1,000 get encephalitis that can lead to mental troubles and neurological troubles. And 1 to 2 or 3 out of 1,000 die. So when you ask the question, why even now in 2019 are we having deaths throughout the world? The reason is, despite the fact that most people recover well, it is potentially a lethal disease.
Now, tell me about the people who have become ill in this country and how seriously they have been affected.
Well, fortunately, we have not seen deaths in the sense that you would see when you have very large numbers. But when you have massive outbreaks, it was just recently reported that there were about 126 deaths in the Philippines last year related to measles. Those aren't cases. Those are deaths of children that could have been avoided. In Madagascar, there were several hundred deaths associated with measles. Again, it occurs in a relative small proportion, but when you have large outbreaks, sooner or later, you're going to see both serious complications and an occasional death. And it becomes all the more tragic because this is an entirely preventable disease.
There was this rumor that began and has somehow taken hold among the anti-vaccine group that this combination of injection, which is for measles,
it's mumps and rubella, MMR,
causes autism. Right. Tell us how that began.
Well, that began by a fraud, Diane. In the late 1990s, a physician, a Dr. Wakefield, in the UK, reported an association between the measles, mumps, rubella, particularly measles, and autism. When that information was examined carefully, it was found out to be completely false, fraudulent, and fabricated. The person lost his medical license because of that. And yet, that got into the internet stream. It was there. So when you Google it, you see measles, you see autism. And unfortunately, the good news about the internet is that it spreads a lot of information. The bad news about the internet, it continues to spread false information. So right now, even though it has been unequivocally shown that measles vaccination does not cause autism, there still, it's out there among people who use that as an excuse for not getting their children vaccinated, which is really very unfortunate.
And just 19 years ago, measles was declared eliminated.
Correct.
In the U.S. And when did he begin putting that information
exactly
out?
Then the timing was the same, the late 1990s into the early 2000s. And that's when people started to get that information and start saying they didn't want to get their children vaccinated.
Where was it first published?
It was first published in a British journal called Lancet. And that's the reason why it was brought to the attention of the British. And to their credit, when they investigated that, they then went ahead and said, this man is a fraud.
What kind of education did he have?
He was a physician. He was trained as a medical doctor. Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And that's the reason why it's important for us when we try to convince the parents who are being misled by this information, rather than attacking them because it's not their fault. They're getting false information, to try and explain to them that we need to make medical decisions based on evidence and based on scientific facts. And when you look at the evidence and you look at the scientific facts, it becomes very clear that vaccines are very safe, including the measles vaccine.
What about the federal government and its involvement here?
The federal government can have very little to do with that. What you usually see at the state level, there are three major reasons why people can be exempt or waivered from getting a vaccine associated with getting into school. The incentive, if you want to call it that, for parents to get their children vaccinated, that throughout the country at state and local school districts, you're not allowed to get your child into school unless they have the whole menu of vaccinations.
Right.
But there are three reasons that you can get a waiver. One is a religious reason, where your religion, your clear official religion, doesn't want you to get
and
vaccinated.
And which religions are
Christian
they?
Scientists and things like that. Jehovah's Witnesses. So that's the first thing. The second thing is if you have a medical reason, if you are ill and you have a immunodeficient type of a situation where you're on chemotherapy for a cancer or another disease, or you have some other illness that prevents you from getting a live attenuated vaccine. But the third category is the one that's most abused, and that's called a philosophical reason. And a philosophical reason, you could say just philosophically, I don't want to get vaccinated. And what we're seeing in some locations now is a realization that it's that category which is leading to the expansion of the number of people who are not vaccinated. And just a few years ago, Governor Jerry Brown in California realized that after the California outbreak in Disneyland and said that they were going to be much more strict on allowing philosophical waiving and philosophical exemptions.
So who determines whether a philosophical exemption should be permitted?
Well, that's the point. There isn't an official person that does that unless a state or local authority will say, we are going to restrict philosophical exemptions and philosophical waiving.
So what we have now on the front page of The Washington Post the other day was a woman with a baby in her arms and a three-year-old. She's afraid to take her child out, the younger, into the community because so many of her neighbors have not had their children vaccinated.
Right.
And she is deathly, literally afraid for that infant.
Right.
Who is most vulnerable?
Well, the important thing that most people don't appreciate of why we have to have this protective veil in society is that you can't vaccinate an infant until they're 11 to 12 months old.
Right.
Because of the nature of their immune system. So just think about it. In society, all of the babies, the infants who are from day one of birth to 11 to 12 months are vulnerable. And those are the ones that need to be protected. And you protect them by vaccinating everybody else so that when those babies go out to society with the mother or the father and there's someone in society who's infected, that person won't spread it to the child. There are other people who are vulnerable. There are people who have cancer, who have chemotherapy for their cancer, whose immune system is suppressed. There are people who have other reasons to have suppressed immunity. Those individuals are vulnerable. And that's the reason why when you vaccinate a child, you do two things. You protect the child, but you also fulfill your obligation to society to be part of the broad protective blanket of immune function, which would allow you to essentially protect yourself against measles.
All right. So suppose the older of those two children, the three-year-old, goes to school. He has already been vaccinated. But say someone who has not been vaccinated has measles, and that little child comes home. What are the chances?
That's a good question, Diane. Let's say the older sister of an infant that's 6 months old, if that older sister who's 3 years old has been vaccinated and goes out and gets into contact with a person who has measles because that person was not vaccinated, there's a 97 to 98% chance that that child is protected and won't bring measles back to the house to the infant. And that's the reason why it's important to get the family members vaccinated, because you not only protect yourself, but when you come back into the home, you protect the infants.
What about adults like you and me?
Well, the good news, Diane, is that once you've been infected with measles, you have lifelong protection. So you and I now had the ultimate vaccination. We got infected when we were children.
And now a quick break. When we come back, more from Dr. Anthony Fauci.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District,
Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here is the rest of my conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. I have been told that if someone who has the measles has been in a room, that someone who has not been vaccinated can walk into that room, never making close contact, but that measles spreads through the air.
Yeah, there are two important facts that relate to what you just said, Diane. So the attack rate for measles is such that, let's say we're in a room and there are 20 people in the room and a child comes in with measles and coughs and sneezes. Of the people in the room who have not been vaccinated, let's say for some strange reason, half of them have not been vaccinated, 90% of the unvaccinated people will get infected from that child coughing and sneezing. The thing that's also astounding but true is that if I have measles as a child and I come into this room and cough and sneeze and then go out into the street and go home, for the next 2 hours, the people who come into this room, because the droplets are still there spreading, you can get infected even though the person who's infected is no longer in the same room. That's how infective measles is. It's one of the most highly transmissible viruses of any viruses we know.
Do you think that people simply do not understand the danger of measles?
I think it's partly that. I think they don't understand it or appreciate it, but that in some respects is understandable because the people who are out in society now did not grow up at a time when people were getting sick, seriously ill, and dying. In fact, if you go now to people who are just out of medical school and training and their internship and residency, the overwhelming majority of them have never even seen a case of measles. So it's not on people's radar screen. So when you don't see a lot of sick people, you don't see a lot of children getting complications, you tend to think it's not a problem. But that is understandable. That's why we've got to make sure we don't go back in time and have enough unvaccinated people that we recreate that time when you and I were children, when there was a lot of measles.
Now, is it up to states as to whether a child has to be vaccinated?
It is not a federal issue. It's definitely at the state and local levels, schools at the state and local level. It is not a federal national thing.
So how come New York and Washington State got hit?
Well, they got hit because in a very subtle way, that philosophical exemptions sort of crept in. And then when you got that critical mass of people, you know, it is a critical percentage. And we know now from experience, if you have 95-96% of the population vaccinated, the ones who are not vaccinated are protected by herd immunity. Once you get down below 90, 85, 80, then you're in trouble because then you have vulnerability.
But New York and Washington State are certainly progressive.
Well, now they are. Things have now changed quite clearly. I mean, if you just take a look, even in a very recent yesterday article in the New York Times, they showed that the people in Washington state now are realizing what's going on in their state. And there is a major drive. More people are asking for vaccinations than have in the last couple of years.
So, Dr. Fauci, is the U.S. kind of an outlier here?
No.
What's happening around the world?
No, unfortunately, Diane, the United States is not an outlier when it comes to the anti-vaccine situation. The situation in Italy is bad, unfortunately, and in other European countries. But Italy and Greece and other places, if you look, the percentage of people in the general population who don't have measles vaccine, it is a disaster waiting to happen.
So what are doctors in those countries telling their patients?
Well, that's a good question, because I actually came into contact by email and telephone with several of my colleagues who are in Rome and in Milan and Genoa and places like that. And they are terribly frustrated. It's become, you know, not only a medical but a political issue where politicians are taking sides. The libertarians are saying the government should not be telling us what we should be doing. And purely on the basis of this desire for libertarian freedom, you're essentially leaving your children and your population unprotected. You do that after a while, it always comes back to roost. What will happen is that you will get more and more people unvaccinated. Then you'll have a massive outbreak in these countries the way we have seen before historically. And then everyone swings over to the other side and says, oh, my goodness, what have we done?
Let's talk about the legitimate resistance to the vaccine.
Any intervention at all, any intervention that you give, a pill, an aspirin, anything, there is a fraction. That fraction may be 1 in 20 million, but there's a fraction that there will be an adverse event. So what you've got to make sure you do when you talk to people and say, it is true that anything, any vaccine, any intervention, there could be an adverse event. But if you balance the overall decades-long observation of safety of vaccines against the positive effects of the vaccine, overwhelmingly, it leans towards vaccinating, without a doubt.
On the other hand, it does strike me that this is part of a larger issue of distrust.
Right.
Of anyone in authority, and especially governments and even doctors who are saying this will be fine.
Well, a great point that transcends the issue of vaccines. So if you look at an understandable, because sometimes authority is not true to the public. And there's reason for lack of trust. We see that in politics all the time. We see that in fraudulent behavior all the time. So given that there is a distrust of authority, that's something that's unfortunate, but in some respects understandable. The problem is, if you have distrust in politics and you say, well, I don't believe him, it's no harm for anybody. I just don't believe you. You're a politician. You're a person in authority. But when that distrust leads to danger to the health of your children and danger to the health of society, that's a different story. The consequences of that type of distrust are much different than distrust, which just sort of is meaningless.
And let's talk about the dissemination of the information. Facebook has certainly been criticized for disseminating false information in other areas. What about this?
Well, absolutely. I mean, again, there are so many positive things about social media, the connectivity between people. But once you get that ability to have direct access to people with no filters, that's when false information can really be destructive. And unfortunately, the very mechanisms, you want to say Facebook, the internet in general, Twitter, however it is that this information is spread, there's very little that you can do about it. I know some of the executives of those companies are starting to look at, are there things that we should judge to be really dangerous to society and pull that out? Again, there's a lot of debate about that right now.
The other thing, of course, is whether the entire public health community underestimated the danger of exactly that kind of dissemination of misinformation.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it's certainly, I would say it took us by surprise, but now that it's become clear to us, it's very frustrating that we need to counter with an equally aggressive, if you want to use that word, dissemination of scientifically based information.
So what does that mean? How are you going to do that?
Well, it means like, am I sitting here on a podcast talking to you, trying to get the facts out or writing articles about it, getting the newspapers to do stories about that? I think right now, over the last few weeks, the amount of press coverage that has gone on with regard to the measles outbreaks, I think, has been very important.
So you think getting the message out is one important step. What about educating politicians?
Again, very important, and I find myself in that position not infrequently. In fact, in the next 1.5 to 2 weeks, I'm going to be testifying before the Congress about measles and anti-vax and what the consequences of that are. So clearly, there is a keen interest right now on the part of the United States Congress.
What do we know about members of Congress and their thoughts on this anti-vaccine movement?
You know, I think that the Congress represents the public in many respects, that there are congressmen and senators who feel very strongly that we've got to make sure that the children get vaccinated. And there are those who are not grossly anti-vax, but they have some questions, which I think are valid to ask us the questions. So I look forward, actually, to getting in front of a congressional committee and having those questions asked of me. But in general, the Congress has been very supportive.
And then what can the Congress do?
Well, the Congress represents the federal government.
Yeah.
So they cannot do things from a federal regulation, but they can certainly bring attention to it. And when they bring attention, I mean, that's in many respects the beauty and the positive aspects of having a congressional investigation or a congressional committee. You focus on the problem and then other things start moving. And that's the reason why we in the public health arena welcome having a congressional hearing on this in order to get it out in the public.
Have you personally talked with an individual or a group of anti-vaccine
parents? Yes, I have multiple times.
Tell me about those conversations.
Well, you know, the one thing I've learned, and I think it's very important, you don't get anywhere by denigrating the people for their thoughts and their feelings.
Not.
And criticizing them and pointing a finger at them and saying you're to blame. What you do is you try to have a dialogue and explain what the facts are and why it's important to make decisions when it comes to public health based on hard evidence and facts. And my experience has been that you will have a relatively small percentage of people that no matter what you say or do, they will not change their minds. However, they are really in the minority, and the overwhelming majority of people have reasons that vary from misinformation that's correctable. If you tell them the right information, they'll change their mind. Or things as mundane as not having access or time in their own life to be able to get the kids, being busy with other things, just forgetting it, innocent things that are not philosophically based. So what you need to do is to realize that you're dealing with a heterogeneous group and don't treat the anti-vaxxers as a unidimensional group. Realize that there are some that you're going to win over merely by facts, some by explaining to them the importance of it, and others, maybe whatever you do, it's not going to change them.
Well, I can think of no better person to do that, Dr. Fauci, than you. You really have your work cut out for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And that's all for today. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. You can find all our podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianereem.org. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Douglas Bell and Josephine Neonai. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you again on Friday. I'm Diane Rehm.